The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
Hour 1 down, we roll on the Paul Feinbaum Show. 4 o'clock on this Tuesday afternoon Eastern Time, 3 o'clock Central. Tom Hart in for Paul Feinbaum, and our great guest list rolls on as well. We got Bill Conley from ESPN.com on the line right now. Bill, I'm really curious. First of all, where are you right now?
Columbia, Missouri.
Man, that's fantastic. The 65203. I'm so happy.
Holding down the Columbia office.
Columbia office of ESPN.com exists in the 573. That's a beautiful thing. You've got your Big 12 mega offseason preview out. What's the timeline for the SEC preview?
I think we're going to do Big 10 the next two Tuesdays, and then the SEC after that. So whatever that is, beginning of August, I guess.
So when you do these previews, and if you guys aren't familiar with Bill's work, it's analytic heavy, I think is a fair way to describe it, right?
Focused. It's words. It's words and not numbers, but yeah, it is certainly informed by the analytics side.
We witnessed a college football season last year unlike anything we had ever seen, unless there are people listening that were around for the Spanish flu. So because of that, the numbers obviously are skewed. I mean, the numbers are skewed, the experiences are skewed, everything is different. So I'm curious how these 10-game seasons, or shorter, influence what the numbers tell you about predictions for this upcoming season.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things when my updated SP Plus projections come out in August, one of the things that I'm going to have done for those is, like, normally in a normal year, you know, it's a certain percentage based on returning production and the projected improvement or regression based on that. And part of it's based on recent history and, you know, program health, so to speak. Part of it's based on recruiting. What you're probably going to see with the projections coming up is less weight than normal based on last year's production and specifically last year and that returning production piece. Like, that's just for Alabama, I think we got a pretty representative sample and it should be about normal for them. They played 13 games, but for Ohio that played 3, it's really hard to use the same criteria as normal. We just got a tiny taste of what we needed to from some of those teams. Arizona State played 4 games.
Yeah.
And it's just, yeah, I mean, it's just not going to be the full picture. We didn't get enough of a sample last year, and it's going to be based on those kind of that program health aspect, the recruiting aspect, stuff like that.
This is kind of a new way, I mean, newish, I think, for the average fan to look at college football, to use the numbers. And it's not just college football you write about. I mean, you've written about soccer and tennis and everything else throughout the course of the summer. But a new way to think about where does my team stand and what can we learn about what my team went through? What can that tell us about the future? So this is, I'm going to go diverge a little bit here. How did you get into this?
It basically, you know, what would it have been like 14 and a half years ago? I started a Mizzou blog and I was looking for unique things to talk about. And I Googled, college football advanced analytics and nothing came up. And so I started playing with the play-by-play myself. That's basically where it started. It got hooked up with Football Outsiders within a couple of years and all these other things. But that was the gist of it. I just wanted to supplement my writing with something unique. Obviously, baseball stats were, you know, very renowned by that point, advanced stats and whatnot. And there was nothing, or very, very little, I should say, in existence on the college football side. So I started tinkering, basically.
You created your own cottage industry. Now you're on regularly that direct flight from Columbia, Missouri to Bristol, Connecticut, which you can get there in no time. No time flat. You're also master of words. You used a description recently that I fully embrace. You referred to somebody as, quote, Kansas Dyer. All right, who else out there in the college football world is Kansas Dyer? Like, let's talk about extremes. We can talk about Alabama and Clemson all day. Who's going to be really, really, really bad this year?
I mean, Kansas. there's not another comp for them at the Power 5 level. Obviously, Vanderbilt really, really struggled last year. It's going to take them, I think, a little while to put the pieces back together. Rutgers was – I think they started putting the pieces back together last year, but I love the Lance Leipold hire at Kansas. I've interacted with him. I've known about him for a long time. I think he's the perfect hire for that kind of program, but he's going to take his time. He's going to strip it down to the studs, which is already almost there. But it's going to take a little while for them to really to get a full 85 scholarship roster in place. It's just going to take a while. And so that's not going to be a very fast turnaround, even though I love the hire they made.
No, it's a hot mess over there. The SEC isn't without, obviously, its coaching changes, especially in the East. Have you, as you work on these previews, and I know they're very time intensive, but what kind of difference can we expect if you've started yet in the strength of the SEC West overall versus the strength of the SEC East?
Yeah, I mean, so many East programs are starting over this year. I don't think this is going to be a year where things even out very much. Obviously, you know, like I just said about Vanderbilt, but South Carolina, I mean, there's a lot to like about what Beamer's doing, but not a lot of it is going to apply to 2021. I think this is just going to be kind of a year zero. Bring in your transfers, get your recruiting going, see what you've got and see what you need to address kind of year. And so I don't expect anything major there. But, you know, Tennessee obviously is kind of a mystery with as much turnover as they're going on. It's just going to be tricky. I do think Georgia's going to be top five level. Florida's going to be top 10 or 12 level. But after that, I don't think there's an obvious, you know, top 25 program in that number three spot.
You've got the Big Ten coming out next. The Big 12 is already available, the mega preview on ESPN.com. What are the odds that Jim Harbaugh wins enough this year to be the head coach of the University of Michigan when we talk again at this time next year?
It really is hard to figure out where the bar is set for him because, you know, the right people support him. And it, by all accounts, it kind of seems like they still do. I do. It's really, you know, the offense is just such a mystery still. I think I might like what they have in place, but I'm not completely sure. Meanwhile, the defense is kind of starting over. It's I think from a projection standpoint, my projections are going to have them right around 8-4. Is that good enough? I don't really know if that's good enough at this point, at this stage in the game. If it's an 8-4 where the defense bounces back and they lose a couple of close games and all that, then maybe that's okay. But if it's just kind of the same kind of inconsistency we saw last year and they really don't, you know, can't hold a candle to Ohio State and Penn State and all that, then maybe it is time for a change.
Yeah, 8-4 didn't used to be good enough at Michigan, but right. the perspective has certainly changed. We're going to have Eli Drinkwitz, head coach at Mizzou, on later on in the show. Have you gone deep enough with your projections, say, for Missouri this year?
Yeah, they're kind of a mystery. You can kind of see whatever the heck you want to see with Missouri this year. Obviously, you know, last year Drinkwitz did a really nice job of figuring out matchups and just creating kind of a different offense from week to week. He had a makeshift receiving core, kind of a makeshift line for a while. They threw a lot some weeks, ran a lot some weeks, and all these other things. They won every close game. They came through late. They built a lot of confidence. Then he turns around and recruits really well. Like, it seems like a lot of the arrows are pointed in the right direction. I guess my one concern there, from a numbers standpoint, they didn't really grade out all that well last year because when you win all your close games, but then you get blown out by, you know, the better teams on the schedule, it's going to kind of tamp your ratings down a little bit. So second year elite potential, I think, but I it's hard for me to necessarily trust that. I think if they get to a bowl this year and hold on to the recruiting class they're putting together, then maybe a third year leap is going to be the most likely scenario.
Okay, before we let you go, if we put SP Plus and rated all the restaurants in Columbia, Missouri, who you got number one?
Oh, man, we are in love with a new spot. Obviously, the Flat Branches and Shakespeare's and Booch's, all those places are still great, but Bard Owl is the best place in Columbia right now. That is, I cannot speak highly enough of Bard Owl downtown.
All right, well, I will be – that's in the old Georges, I think. That's up Broadway by the library, if I'm not mistaken. So maybe if
yeah,
I make
it
back
it's
to
up
my
in that direction.
Yeah, make it back to my hometown this summer. I can pay you for your appearance here, and we'll meet up there, and we'll talk some football. How about that?
Absolutely.
Bill Sounds Connolly great. from ESPN.com. You can find his Big 12 Mega offseason preview there, Big 10 coming next week, and then the SEC to follow. Thanks for your time, Bill. Appreciate it.
Absolutely.
All right, we're going to take your calls next. 855-242-7285. 855-242-7285. Sean from Austin, you are on deck. We will get to you right after this. This is the Feinbaum Show. Tom Hart sitting in for Paul today. We're back right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Paul Feinbaum Show continues now in the second hour. Tom Hart in for Paul today. Happy to have you along with us. Want to hear from you. You can call in 855-242-7285, 855-242-7285. I had a fantastic first hour. Cole Kublick broke down just about every team in the SEC, as only he can. He thinks South Carolina's going to have a few more wins than folks assume. It'll be interesting to see what Shane Beamer can do year number one. Richard Johnson was on with us, split zone duo, and Thinking Out Loud, and Bill Connolly broke down how predictions will work this year. He's got mega previews out. Big 12 is out right now on ESPN.com. Going forward, we'll have the Big 10 coming out next, and then the SEC following a couple of Big 10 releases. Let's go to the phone lines. We start in Austin, Texas. Sean, how are you today?
Hey, I'm doing fine. Thanks for taking my call. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. What's on your mind?
Well, I want to talk a little bit about name, image, and likeness. I'm a longtime listener of Feinbaum, obviously the topic du jour, and there's been a ton of commentary on pretty much every side of the argument, but I haven't heard this, and I have a theory about as to why the NCAA has acted the way that they have and drug their feet on this.
Okay.
So.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand-name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
Paul has evinced this, as well as many callers have called in and stated that they feel confused by the NCAA's actions. And, you know, they allowed this to happen, essentially, and everything is happening to them versus them being proactive. I think that's pretty much the consensus of agreement.
Yeah.
I think this is a carefully orchestrated decision by the NCAA specifically and for a very specific reason. Allowing the NIL to get passed in every individual state as the state sees fit, and obviously that's going to work itself out as each state's interests in major college revenue producing sports will tug on the shirt tails of their respective legislators to advance their interests. They're fine with that happening in as much as this. That's a distraction. And what it distracts is it allows the college athletes to feel like they've achieved something, allows them to go out and get whatever income they want off of their individual name and image, likeness, whatever they've got. We don't need to rehash that. Mm-hmm. But what it distracts against is this: the College Athlete Right to Organize Act and collective bargaining and full freedom to organize. And that's what this is. The NCAA is deathly afraid of these amateur athletes being determined non-amateur and essentially employees. Because when that happens, and that ultimately is going to happen, this was the first shoe to drop. When this became a sea change and we saw this momentum start to pick up, and we saw all of the stuff that happened last summer and, you know, everything that went in with individual liberty versus collective liberty, this, that, and the other, I mean, it's a perfect melting pot for the advance of the individual to come before, right?
Why couldn't the NCAA, though, have been proactive and allowed name, image, and likeness across the board to keep the states out of it so it would be a more even playing field, and do so in a way that, according to your theory, that would still be a distraction? Here's, look at this. Here's the shiny object over here. Look at all this money you can make. Look at what we're going to allow you to do to distract you from the other side. I mean, that's not just a shiny object. That is a huge shiny object. And in my opinion, when players are saying, well, I can get mine, there's going to be less care of doing anything collectively, because we see it already. Spencer Rattler is going to make a heck of a lot more than his right tackle is. So why would he want to collectively bargain?
The reason is, it is a drop in the bucket to what could be achieved if they were allowed to go in there and organize and actually go in there as employees and start cutting into the college's ability to generate their profits. Obviously, we're talking about multi-billion-dollar television contracts that those athletes could state as, we are essentially commodities mm-hmm. that you are utilizing the leverage to in order to generate these enormous and ridiculous revenues. We want a piece of the pie. That piece of the pie is going to be so much greater in large measure than what each individual athlete can organize with their local, you know, sporting goods store or car dealer, or, you know, TikTok star, this, that, and the other. As we look going forward, and just the NCAA is, and college presidents and college universities, more importantly, because the NCAA is merely a mouthpiece that serves the colleges, right? The colleges and the conferences are the ones who go out and negotiate these agreements, do they not?
Yeah.
So if we're talking about these players, these athletes going together and saying, okay, we're going to be in the Big 12 Conference, for example. I'm in Austin, so I'm going to use that. The Big 12 Conference has its own negotiation with the Big 12 Network, or not the Big 12 necessarily, but the Longhorn Network, et cetera, as well as television rights, et cetera, as we move through the rest of the season, postseason, et cetera, right?
Yeah.
If the players were brought to fore to where they could collectively bargain and say, we want a percentage of those overall revenues, then the floodgates would completely open. And I'm going to answer your question that you asked me a little earlier as to why that didn't happen. Because chaos is a hell of a lot more distracting than a clean playing field that they would easily be able to attack. Because here's what's going to happen is, this is a domino. We're going to see how this happens. It's going to be chaotic. There's going to be a lot of, this person's getting this person's getting that. Oh, my God, what's going to happen? There's going to be people that are going to take advantage of it. There will be lawsuits. There will be all sorts of angst. There will be all sorts of chaos that's going on. But once that levels up, once we get a little bit of time and we get a little bit of distance away from this and we can see the playing field for what it is, the athletes are going to continue to realize, oh, my God, this is just a tip of the iceberg. We have the opportunity to leverage ourselves and completely cash in on this model that has been a monopoly for literally 100 years. And when that happens, good luck stopping that freight train.
Well,
then you're stepping in the way of antitrust and everything else that goes into that. And you know as well as I do that College Athlete Right to Organize Act was brought forth by largely Democratic senators from largely Democratic states that have high union concentrations, mm-hmm. right? For the listeners of the Paul Feinbaum show, which demographically are typically in the SEC or in the Sun Belt areas, which are largely right-to-work states, this bell does not ring as loudly for them because they are distanced from it, because they pride themselves on being at will. When those unionized states and parts of the country are fully leveraged and brought to fore and gain momentum, look out, because the athletes will figure it out, or more importantly, the blood-sucking, shark-infested waters that are filled with every attorney out there that's looking to get paid, they'll see the money, and they'll go after it. They'll organize these kids, and it's over.
Sean, thanks for the call. I don't think it's the athletes who are going to figure it out. Not, and I'm not selling them short. They are the future of our country. They're very bright people, but their shelf life as athletes is so small that by the time you get introduced to it, that you can fight for it, that you can make an impact, well, next thing you know, you're out of college, you're moving on to the next thing. And if this doomsday scenario comes true, you're going to continue to see athletic departments shrink. That revenue goes away. What goes away? Non-revenue sports. And at least as many as you can afford to get rid of and still be compliant with Title IX. Who knows? I think we are entering into uncharted territory, uncharted waters. We don't know what this is going to do to collegiate sports forthcoming. We do know that it's going to be disruptive in many ways. How disruptive to the status quo? Only time will tell. We want to continue to take your calls at 855-242-7285. When we return, though, we're going to talk about athletes that have the opportunity to cash in and cash in immediately. Those baseball players in a wide range of them, right? Out of high school, out of junior college, after they turn 21. Draft eligible in baseball, unlike any other sport, through different areas and different times of your playing career, have now cashed in. The MLB draft has concluded, the SEC specifically, as always, very well represented. We'll talk to our friend Chris Burke about that as the Paul Finebaum Show continues right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Finebaum Show podcast.
Tom Hart in for Paul Finebaum. We want to take your calls, 855-242-7285. We just had a fantastic call from Sean from Austin, who discussed name, image, and likeness as a distraction to the College Athletes' Right to Organize Act. Tom from Pennsylvania will get to you shortly. He's on the line to respond to Sean. If you have a thought on it, we want to hear from you as well. We had a right to organize in Omaha and in Hoover, Alabama for college baseball coverage. That's when I last saw Chris Burke, until he popped up on my television the other night covering the MLB draft for ESPN. Burkey, welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
I am good, buddy. Look at you hosting Finebaum, sounding smooth, bro. Good to be with you.
Well, the radio only. Radio only. This is not a TV show today. I guess it returns.
You got to keep your face off TV.
Yeah. We've had too much of that.
Yeah.
MLB draft has been very interesting for a lot of different reasons. By the way, the Angels and the Dodgers, each of their first 15 picks were pitchers. Dodgers then went shortstop. I think the Angels are still relying heavily on pitchers. Obviously, there's heavy SEC influence. Jack Leiter of Vandy went second overall to the Rangers. Kumar Rocker didn't go until 10th overall. He went to the Mets. I think it's a great place for him to land. People were saying they might go both in the top five, but I think it would help if you explain to folks the Major League Baseball draft is different than any other draft for two ways. Number one, teams don't necessarily draft on need because we're years away from these guys reaching the big leagues. And at the same time, economics plays a bigger role than most. So while teams may have been, for example, the Royals may have been more interested in Kumar Rocker than Frank Muzzucato, a lefty high school pitcher out of Connecticut, but they knew they had the money to sign Muzzucato, and maybe they didn't have the same funds to get Rocker. Same with Jordan Lawler, a shortstop going sixth overall instead of, say, fifth overall to the Orioles. I don't know, and I don't know that organizations would ever educate us on how the money impacted who they went. They'd deny it to the end. That all taken into consideration, how do you think the SEC fared in the draft this year?
You know, it was a weird year. Obviously, you got four guys in the first round, all pitchers. There was thought that maybe Judd Fabian would get into the first round. Certainly was projected there to start the season and just had, you know, kind of a up and down year and slid to the second round. But very rare that the SEC would go an entire year and not have a bat taken in the first round. And I don't think that trend will last very long, right? I think the upcoming years are going to see a ton of SEC position players go early. That being said, I think it went about the way you would expect. I mean, I think if Gunnar Hoglund has a full year, he's probably in the top 10. I think Kumar Rocker, I think a little bit of the velo dipping towards the end. I think a little bit of, we'll see when the numbers come out, but something tells me that Mr. Boris had something to do with Kumar landing in New York.
Interesting.
And so, but I do think Hoagland would have been a top 10 pick. And I think Jaden Hill potentially would have been a top 10 pick, or excuse me, a first round pick had this season, had he not gotten hurt. So, but for the most part, I would say that, you know, with a month or so to go, I'm not shocked by the way the first round played out for the SEC.
What about overall college baseball versus high school baseball? What did we learn from this year's draft as to where organizations are looking for their talent?
Well, it was pretty crazy to start the day today. I had a text from Kevin O'Sullivan, and he wanted to make sure that I saw the stat that through the first 10 rounds, 80% of the players that were taken were from college. Now that's
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
That's pretty crazy when you think, you know, in the first round, there was plenty of high school prospects taken. But once we got past the first 29 picks, man, I mean, it went hard college baseball. And 80% is a pretty loud number. So it just shows you what we know to be true and what Rob Manfred admitted himself, the commissioner of Major League Baseball, that college baseball is the best breeding ground for professional baseball, and they are using it as such. I mean, they've cut the draft from 50 rounds to 20. They've eliminated numerous levels and teams of minor league baseball, and they're just going to lean on college baseball to develop their players.
It's very similar to how the NFL leans on college football.
Mm-hmm. And I think, Tom, as we go, you know, a lot of people like to knock, you know, the modern narrative is kind of easy to take shots at so many of the new school thought processes that are going on. But I'll say this. I think as much as I don't like to see baseball leave small town America, and I'm hopeful that independent ball and some of these pre-draft leagues and some things like that will fill the void in some of the places that have been used to professional baseball throughout the spring and summer. I do think it's wise to lessen the amount of minor leagues and get the best players to the big league sooner. I think for too long there was specifically pitchers wasting too many bullets in the minor leagues. And honestly, there's, you know, the teams that aren't in the hunt, there's really no reason to not let your best young players learn in the big leagues.
Yeah.
And so I think we're seeing a trend, to me, that makes a lot of sense, which is, you know, if I'm in the bottom third of Major League Baseball, let's get these guys up to the big leagues. That way when they're 23, 24, 25, they're not just learning. They've already learned. And, you know, we know in the post-steroid era, most players' best years are 25 to 32. So why do I want to let them just figure it out from 24 to 27 when I can help them figure it out from 22 to 24, you know?
And then if hold on to those guys when the Yankees start calling, hey, before we let you go, great stuff and great work on the draft. It was great being with you again throughout this entire college baseball season. Football is going to be on us before we know it. What's your take on where Tennessee football is right now?
Well, I'd be shocked if they don't run away with the East. I mean, I think everybody's predicting that. So, I tell you what, I will say this about Josh Heupel. I'm not trying to be disrespectful because I really do think he's going to put a fun brand of ball in the field. But the bar is very low with the fan base. Like, I think they would be tickled at 6-6 and points, right?
Yeah, give us points.
I hate to say that, but I would be happy with 6-6 and let's score a bunch of points and hopefully get the NCAA thing behind us and we can actually turn the corner. But that's kind of where it is right now. That's where Tennessee football is.
It's fair for you to say because you are part of the Tennessee fan base. So, Chris Burke, you can speak to that. So, if Tennessee fans have a problem, that's your own VFL that said that, but I don't think they will. Thanks for being with us. Great work on the draft the other night, buddy.
All right, Tommy. Appreciate it, man.
All right. I hope the golf game stays good. That's Chris Burke. We're going to dive back into the NIL stuff and the College Athletes' Right to Organize Act. We've got Tom from Pennsylvania. You're due up next. We want to hear from others. 855-242-7285. 855-242-7285. As the Paul Feinbaum Show continues, Tom Hart sitting in for Paul. We'll be back right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Welcome back. Paul Feinbaum Show continues on this Tuesday afternoon. Tom Hart in Atlanta sitting in for Paul today. We'll be back again tomorrow. Got a great guest list that we're putting together tomorrow, including my buddy Andy Kennedy, head basketball coach at UAB. We're going to talk transfer portal, name, image, and likeness, how it impacts that level, and plenty more. We want to continue to take your calls as well. 855-242-7285. 855-242-7285. Sean from Austin had a great call previously talking about name, image, and likeness and the impact of the College Athlete Right to Organize Act and how that will be impacting collegiate sports in years to come. Let's go back to the phones. Tom from Pennsylvania is waiting patiently. Hey, Tom, how are you?
I'm doing well. I'm actually from Alabama. I drive trucks. I'm just in Pennsylvania right now.
Oh, fair enough. Okay.
But, you know, listen to Sean. You think he may have a lawyer or two in his family tree. Yeah. If they ever let lawyers get in it, you know, it's probably going to all be over with anyway. Everybody thinks all these schools are making all this money. Well, some of them are, but I bet if they go check and see how many were in the red and how many were actually making money, you could probably count the ones making money on both your hands. Yeah. Mm-hmm. People don't realize that. I don't believe.
Well, they do a great job of deciding where to spend that money. Coaching salaries, and I'm not just talking football or men's basketball, coaching salaries have increased exponentially over the previous 10 years or so. I mean, I'm talking about the rifle coach and the swimming coach and the softball coach and sports that aren't necessarily revenue sports. And what I mean by that is they don't finish plus, yet spending more and more on coaches, facilities, also a big part of that because the money's got to go somewhere to try and keep it close to even or stay close to even. But I digress. By the way, what route were you on to get to Pennsylvania? Did you hug 81 and go through Roanoke?
I'm on 81 right now, headed back to Alabama. I'm in Scranton right now. So I'm trying to get out from up here.
I understand.
I deliver every Tuesday morning. I deliver in Windsor, Connecticut. Then I usually go to Mass, reload, and go right back home.
That's right at the airport there in Windsor. By the way, Tom, I'm curious. Like, COVID affected every industry in our country. Some good, right? Some good. But what was it like for you if you were still on the road? You know, let's go back to this time last year, mid-late summer. What did the nation's interstates look like last July, last August, last September?
They weren't too bad. It's a lot better than it is right now where I'm sitting at running 20 miles an hour. But, yeah, I mean, there's still places. Like, I'm getting ready to retire. My wife is trying to get in touch with Social Security building in Montgomery, Alabama, so I could get all my stuff lined up. And they're still out of work. And I'm like,
yeah.
But truck drivers never quit. If we had, the COVID would have been the least problem that's going on.
Would have been done. Tom, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. I feel the pain sitting in the traffic. I just made the drive back from Atlanta from the North Carolina coast last week. It is a bear. Let's go back to the phone line. Nathan from Houston. Nathan, how are you today? Nathan, are you there? All right, let's bounce down to Florida. We got Mel waiting. Mel, how are you?
I'm good. Tom, thanks for taking my call. You had a gentleman call and had a lengthy conversation about why the NCAA was. I kind of got the impression he thought they were. He suggested they were laying a trap for everybody that. The right to organize was going to be the big issue, and athletes were going to organize and demand this, that, and the other. Well, let me tell you what the fallacy of that argument is. It sounds good on paper, and it sounds interesting, but the problem is if once they organize and are considered employees, then they have serious tax implications. All the soft dollar costs that the colleges put out for the players, which by a Forbes article some years ago was over $150,000 a year. These are soft costs. Coaching received, branding, access to many lucrative benefits, career assessments, counseling, all these things that being a non-employee is the tax treatment is very favorable to athletes on the scholarship. They don't have to pay for the benefits received. And worker status brings those consequences. They may find that employment status means that the IRS considers all these benefits as taxable wages, like we pay who were employed or were employed. I'm retired now, but I paid taxes for 40 something years. So when you look at the hard dollar components of a scholarship, and that's the tuition, room, board, there was an article that used the University of Alabama as the example, and this in 2018 was $27,000 in-state and almost $45,000 out-of-state, so now it's probably over 30 and 50. That's just the hard dollar cost. This article estimated about not estimated. They said about $250,000 was spent nearly a year for each player, in addition to the hard costs. So I'm thinking that if you don't have to be paying taxes, you don't want to be paying taxes.
No doubt about it. There are issues on both sides of that from an employment status versus non-employee. Mel, thanks for the call. Going back to Sean's call, we can talk about the fallacy of the soft money and your tax repercussions that would come from being an employee versus a non-employee. I think the underlying theme with Sean's call is that he's giving the NCAA, in my opinion, way too much credit to be organized such that they have planned so far ahead to have this diversionary tactic to take us away from that aspect of it by allowing the chaos that he predicts will come through name, image, and likeness. Time will tell. No chaos on the other end of this break. We're going to spend some time going back, talking football. Eli Drinkwitz, who had a fantastic year with Missouri last year in the middle of a of a global pandemic is going to talk to us about getting ready for this season and what's on deck for not just Missouri football, but the SEC as well. Tom Hart sitting in for Paul Feinbaum. Eli Drinkwitz is standing by on the other side of this break. We'll continue to take your calls too.